Welcome to the View My Seats podcast for Wednesday, July 16th. I'm your host, John Lord. With me today to talk some baseball is my good friend Chip. Okay, buddy, as a diehard Boston Red Sox fan, how much is this Derek Jeter farewell tour starting to bother you?
I think it's overblown, kind of like his career. But I also think that he is extremely good for the sport, and I recognize and acknowledge that, and, you know, last night was fine, and I'm not sure about the whistle stop tour at every stadium, giving a gift and whatnot, maybe at the places that really matter, the AL East teams and some of the other Yankee rivals. So I don't know if it's bothering me as much as just kind of you expect this something like this to happen and you put up with it.
So would you say that last night, and you're referring to the All-Star game, and I thought that last night was handled fairly well. I had no problem whatsoever with how Derek Jeter was celebrated at last night's All-Star game. I thought the reverence that other players showed for someone of his stature was fairly touching. I thought it was genuine. I thought it was good. I liked it. And I have not really been a participant in other stops of the Derek Jeter experience as he kind of says goodbye at all these different stops throughout baseball. But I've started to think about this being his last season. I've really started to think about this being his last season, not just with the All-Star game, but with the Nike commercial that was released simultaneously with the All-Star break, where you have different dignitaries and players who all kind of tip their cat toward Derek Jeter as he stands in the box in Yankee Stadium. And you and I have kind of exchanged texts about our feelings on this Nike commercial, and we kind of feel differently about it. You want to explain how you feel about that ad?
Sure. I think it's extremely well produced. And again, this is coming from someone who is rooted against Jeter's entire career, but I thought it was really well done. I thought that it was, even though it wasn't a subtle commercial, there were some subtleties in it that I thought were well thought out. They obviously had to play the Red Sox angle, and I think they did that fairly well. The Tiger and Jordan thing were great. And, you know, there was the former teammates sitting at the table, I think I picked up, and obviously Giuliani and a few others. So for everything that's been done for all the hoopla, I actually think that was a pretty well done commercial.
The one thing that bothered me with it, and I'm sure this is as much the Nike producers and the advertising machine's fault as it is Derek Jeter's, is that this commercial was felt a little bit too layered with conceit and self-absorption. I couldn't help but watching it, and Derek Jeter has never been somebody where the attention is on him, even though he's been a part of championship winning teams and in the biggest city and the biggest baseball market in the country, glamour, fame, all that stuff. His whole thing has always been that it's about other people, his teammates, his coaches, everyone else besides him. And that ad just struck me as somewhat the opposite of what he stood for throughout his 20-year career.
Yeah, maybe, but I think maybe after 20 years, you realize you get to take a victory lap or two. And, I won't deny that it is a little bit maybe out of the norm for Jeter, but I think it's super cool that he always wore the Jordan wristbands. I thought that was neat. Now, what seems to get glossed over in this Jeter love is how he, the guy's a dirtbag, but how he refused to move to third base when his team signed arguably the best shortstop in the game at the time, in A-Rod. That doesn't seem to be talked about too much, especially considering that Jeter is a subpar shortstop. And we can debate that if we need to, but.
Interesting. It only took 5 minutes before your Red Sox bias began.
That's
to
not
show
a bias.
Through.
I'm saying A-Rod should have been the shortstop when he was signed by when they signed him for too much money.
Huh, I was going to actually go the other way with this, and I was going to say that after watching last night's All-Star game, and I did watch last night's All-Star game, so I was that viewer. I was actually going to say that for a 40-year-old, he looks pretty spry. I don't know why he's hanging up the cleats.
Oh, no, I agree with that. I totally agree with that. He does look great for a 40-year-old, and he moves pretty well for a 40-year-old, but he's no, you know, his range has been, bad for, I think, more than 5 years. And I think that because he's the captain and because of success, he got away with it. And so I think third base was probably the better play for him.
Well, you weren't going to unseat him with Alex Rodriguez. That just wasn't going to happen in the Bronx. And
right.
And
no, I don't disagree with that. But you know, the team first, put Emery and his teammates first. I don't think that was when he refused to move to third, which I believe was the case. I don't think that was, you know, to your point about the commercial not being the Derek Jeter mold. I think that obviously is outside the narrative of the mold.
Yeah, and I don't really want to spend time debating his place in baseball history, because I do think, you know, his accomplishments have been overblown, but I mean, the guy has over 3,000 hits, well over 3,000 hits. So that is saying something. And
no, I think he's a good hitter, even in great at times, and an amazing postseason player. I'll give him both of those credits.
Yeah. I don't think there's much argument, against those things. And I understand that there are, some who'd say, you know, he wasn't even close to the best shortstop of his era. In fact, there were, you know, a couple that were better than him at their best. You know, Alex Rodriguez was at his best, was mm-hmm. more talented than Derek Jeter. And you could almost argue before Nomar got hurt and his wrists began exploding that Nomar Garciaparra was more talented. And then you throw in somebody like Miguel Tejada. I mean, it was an incredibly, that era of shortstops, we're going to look back on that era as one of the best eras of shortstops in baseball history. So I don't know if he's as talented, but the results speak for themselves. So he definitely deserves our respect. And I think you saw that with how other players viewed him at last night's All-Star game. And that's why he's received so many, so much adoration as he's gone around the country on his farewell tour.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And, you know, coming on the heels of all the scandals, which we obviously don't want to go into that, but that he remains clean as far as we know and has done it for as long as he's done it in the classy way that he's done it. I think it's good for the game. I thought the recognition last night was probably the best part of the All-Star game, which is an exhibition and should count for nothing.
I wanted to mention about what we watched last night with the All-Star game and Derek Jeter and just the time that the fans and other players took from the game to congratulate him on his remarkable career. I couldn't help but think that there won't be another time in I would say the foreseeable future where a player will be celebrated like Derek Jeter was celebrated last night. Can you find or identify any other player on that field or any other player who's, you know, been a perennial All-Star in the last few years who is going to be celebrated as Derek Jeter was last night at the All-Star game?
Well, let's see. Mike Trout was playing in his third All-Star game, so he's getting to the perennial stage, isn't he?
But he hasn't. He hasn't won five championships. He hasn't certainly had the career yet. And I understand that if you project Trout's career, his numbers are historic.
I think you're onto something. I think you'll find it difficult, especially, I mean, because Jeter played on the biggest stage and did it so successfully that it would be very difficult. It's going to be very difficult to match something like that. I mean, it's going to have to be in a big market with a team that's won multiple championships. Doesn't have to be five. But yeah, I think you'd have a tough time doing it, projecting it forward. Also with free agency, you know, it's just very difficult.
Yeah. I was kind of swept up in the history of last night. You know, I'm not a Yankees fan. But I really appreciated how last night transpired because, you know, as someone who loves the game and appreciates the history of the game, that was a pretty cool moment for baseball. And I just couldn't help but think that we might not get another one of those moments for quite some time. I'm going to transition slightly here, to another moment that involved Derek Jeter last night. And that was, and this is probably much ado about nothing. This is, you know, why Twitter and social media and a lot of other things, microphones in players' face can sometimes work against the game. Adam Wainwright, after he gave up a double to Derek Jeter in the first inning, was quoted in the tunnel. I think it was after the first inning, He was quoted in the tunnel as saying that, well, he pretty much grooved a couple of pitches to Derek Jeter. The insinuation from his quotes, were that basically he wanted Derek Jeter to get a hit. And people took offense to those comments and basically, said that if that were the case, that Adam Wainwright disrespected Derek Jeter. So two things. Number one, do you think if Adam Wainwright grooved pitches to Derek Jeter last night, wanted him to get a chance to get a base hit, that disrespects Derek Jeter? And two, have you ever used the term, an expression, pipe shots, to describe anything in baseball before?
No and no. I like unwritten rules. I like different things you need to respect when in the game. But the All-Star game, I think you need to throw all of that out because this is just an exhibition. And I think I probably would have done the same thing if I were in Wainwright's position. And frankly, I wouldn't have said anything. I don't know if you caught what Dennis and Callahan said today about Aaron Andrews in that interview. Probably don't need to bring it up on this podcast, but it's worth checking it out.
We're not going to bring it up, but they're going to be in some.
Yeah, I'm not sure they're going to be in the air anymore.
It wasn't even
relevant.
Oh, we're not going to spend any time. Yeah.
No, but getting back to your question, I have no problem with that. I have a bigger problem with the All-Star game counting for something than I do with, Wainwright grooming pitches or pipe shotting them. And, I don't think that, even the fact that he did mention it, I don't think that should matter either.
Even if he did throw Derek Jeter a couple of softballs, I have zero problem with Adam Wainwright doing that. And I actually take more offense to the baseball police out there, the journalists that cover the game with such reverence, who were so up in arms at how could Adam Wainwright even disrespect someone of Derek Jeter's stature. Those are the people that I would take to task on this, because the All-Star game is an exhibition. Derek Jeter is one of the game's greatest players. If Adam Wainwright feels like giving Derek Jeter a chance to get a base hit in his final All-Star game, then by all means, Adam Wainwright should pipe shot a couple of pitches. His one mistake was speaking honestly in the tunnel after he came out of the game. But I have no problem whatsoever with Adam Wainwright grooving a couple of pitches to Derek Jeter, if that's in fact what he did.
He's doing the opposite of showing him, or disrespecting him. He's respecting him probably as much as he can from one player to the next, in my opinion. That's just, I agree with you. This baseball police need to calm down a little bit.
Yeah, and it's the same guys. It's the same guys who have this moral code, this high ground when it comes to, you know, the Baseball Hall of Fame and the way the game of baseball needs to be played and treated. And mind you, that these people who control much of the decisions as far as the Baseball Hall of Fame, they've never played the game.
No.
They don't know what goes into the moment. They've never been in Adam Wainwright's position. They've never faced down a Derek Jeter in that situation and thought to themselves, you know what, maybe the old man deserves a few pitches on a tee here. And it does bother me that so many people are quick to call out Adam Wainwright for pipe shotting a couple of pitches. And I, you know what, Derek Jeter seems like the kind of guy where this will not keep him up at night.
No, he's got other things to keep him up at night.
He's got other things to keep him up at night. Okay, so we're going to perhaps move away from the All-Star game, although I did want to talk about how the All-Star game and the attention that is paid to the All-Star game and how many people watch the All-Star game is different than it used to be, especially when we were kids. I did kind of want to get into that. Maybe we can get into that later, but
sure.
Let's segue to the American League East, where our favorite teams reside. And I would say that the balance of power has shifted to the West Coast in the American League this year. And you're looking at an American League East where you're probably only going to get one team in the playoffs this mm-hmm. year. And that is different from the last decade and a half, where typically you've had two of the three best teams in baseball all jockeying for one or two playoff spots in their own division. And this year, it doesn't just look like that's gonna happen. So as a Red Sox fan, how much of a disappointment has this year been?
I don't know if I can label it as I guess the year itself, yes, disappointment. But coming off the heels of the World Series Championship, which frankly, I'm not saying we didn't deserve to win because it was basically a wire-to-wire run by this team that the previous year was coming off the terrible Bobby Valentin year. But, you know, we Red Sox fans have little to complain about following what we did last October. Basically winning against the Tigers without hitting the ball. And then moving on to, again, we didn't score a ton of runs. We scored some more runs in the World Series, but again, we weren't tearing the leather off of it. And frankly, the one thing that's made me feel good about this season is that we moved right at the beginning of the baseball season, and I had a decision when I switched to cable providers whether or not to get the baseball package, but Comcast, which is the worst company in America, only gives you a couple games in high def. So I said, you know what, screw it, I'm not going to do it. And thankfully, that would have been the worst money I've spent. I've much more enjoyed watching the local teams, the Nationals and the Orioles down here, than I would have watching the Red Sox. So I wouldn't list them as a disappointment, but it's kind of like, maybe, you know, this is the kind of year we were expecting last year. Maybe I was expecting better than this last year, but I wasn't expecting what we got.
The Boston, and we're at the All-Star break here currently. Boston is 43-52, 9.5 games behind the Baltimore Orioles. Not insurmountable, but it certainly doesn't look like they have the horses this year to put together some sort of second half of the season run. So that being said, you're staring down the possibility of trading your best pitcher. Would you be happy if the Boston Red Sox traded John Lester?
No, I wouldn't. I think Lester's a horse. I think he's. I don't know if he's a leader per se, but I think his performance kind of pushes him into that role anyway. I mean, if you look at what he's done this year with a team that has not hit for anything, I think it's 9-7. His ERA is under 3. He's got a pretty decent WHIP. He has been about as dominant as you can be on a team that's 9 or 10 games under 500 that doesn't hit the ball. And he's been that way through last year's playoffs. I mean, he had some struggles last year, but you know, he's a special player, and I wouldn't want to lose him if we can. Although it seems like we're doing our best to try to piss him off right now. So who knows what's going to happen?
But the Red Sox front office is smart, and there's a trend amongst smart front offices to not overplay pitchers who are heading into the twilight of their career. I mean, it happens all the time. You look at somebody like a CC Sabathia recently, and you can't pay for past performance. And so the problem with paying a John Lester is that you would be overpaying him for what he's done in the past. And if you don't have a problem with that, then you probably have a good chance of signing him. But it seems like the Red Sox front office is going to maybe shy away from that. So the question is, he has a lot of value on the open market. Why not trade him? And then, you know, the possibilities of where you trade him are interesting. I've heard some people talk about the New York Yankees could be an option. If the Yankees kind of hang around this year and need one more pitcher, and maybe John Lester could go to New York. Could you live with John Lester pitching in New York this year?
No. And I think the Yankees need more than one pitcher if Tanaka's done. But although maybe Lester could fill that role, but no, that's not going to happen. That can't happen. There's no way Sherrington does that. No way.
It doesn't look like they're going to certainly resign him during the season. So do you really want to run the risk of playing roulette with him in the off season
when trading to the Yankees? Yes, I'll take that risk.
Absolutely. So you would rather take the risk, yep, of losing John Lester outright than trading him to the dreaded rivals in the Bronx?
Exactly. Without a question.
All right, interesting. So the East is down. The Central is still, I would say, Detroit's division to win, although Kansas City is a little
Yeah, Kansas City's
a little spunky.
They're spunky, spry. I was going to use the word spry. I just think that that Detroit team is, I mean, they were there last year, probably the favorites in the AL last year. And like I just mentioned, we got by them. I don't see the Royals overtaking the Tigers. And I think it's more of a question of how the Royals match up against the teams in the West as far as records, obviously.
Yeah, about the West, there is a distinct possibility that there will be three teams from the AL West in the playoffs.
Yep.
Oakland, the Angels, and Seattle. All three right now, if the season ended today, would qualify for the postseason, which is remarkable. I don't know when the last time three teams came out of the West, although it does seem like, did that happen a couple years ago with Texas? And it could have. Anyway, Oakland is kind of the, even though they have the best record in, I think, in all of baseball, they're still kind of an unknown quantity. And when you get a chance to look at some of their numbers and some of the statistics that these guys are putting up, you know, Josh Donaldson and Derek Norris,
mm-hmm.
and, I mean, these guys are tremendous players. No one knows who they are, Coco Crisp. No one knows who they are, but they play the game like a bunch of beer league softball players. So I, and this has been a theme for the Oakland A's the last decade or so, I question whether or not they have the pedigree to perform in October, but they sure as heck are fun to watch right now.
Oh, they beat the bag out of the Red Sox a few weeks ago, and just watched some of that series. And you're right, the way they play is fun to watch. They've got a ton of talent, like just a ton of talent. And
they just traded for the best, maybe one of the best pitchers
right.
in the National League, and Jeff Smarja.
And it looks, you know, that trade could work out for them. And then the question is, as you brought up, they perennially struggle. Well, maybe not struggle is not the right word, but they can't get to the World Series once they make it to October or September. And so whether or not this team has, but maybe they have the, you know, maybe they're not smart enough to be concerned with that, and they just play baseball. Who knows?
Yeah, they don't seem as if they do a lot of planning. they seem kind of to just roll with the punches to take whatever shots are given them, and that attitude probably works fairly well for a 162 game season. But when you're in the crunch of October in a short series, I think experience and I think mindset and discipline matters as much as anything else. And so I will continue to question Oakland. However, I think that Samardzija Hamill trade is bigger than maybe we realize, because if those guys pitch as they've pitched so far this year, you got yourself a rotation. And as you know, the postseason comes down to pitching. So I wouldn't want to mess with Oakland in the postseason.
No, I'd agree with that. I mean, of course, we're drawing on just over half the season, but judging from that, I agree.
And then we could talk about my Baltimore Orioles, but I don't want to rub it in at this point.
Well, I've watched more Orioles and been to more Orioles games this year than Red Sox. I probably know the Orioles better than I know the Red Sox.
Yeah, and so while we're on the Orioles, you know, I as a fan, my whole life, it's funny, you get to the point now where the Orioles are a perennial, let's call them a good baseball team, not great, good. After so many years of losing, now to be in the position where the Orioles are a contending team, I am quicker to point out their flaws. So, for instance, rather than feel good about the four-game lead they have at the break, I instead look at their schedule in the second half, and they have the Orioles have a brutal schedule in the second half of the year. They're out on the West Coast with the A's and the Angels, and so they have a brutal start to the schedule in the second half. And then I also think about their pitching, their starting pitching, and the lack of starting pitching depth, and that concerns me, especially in the postseason. You know, they have just a collection of three starters, and we knew that was going to be a problem going into the year, and Ubaldo Jimenez has not really proven to be the ace of the staff, and they've got some other young kids who might make a difference, but there are a lot of holes in that pitching staff. But the lineup, if the lineup hits as the lineup can hit, the Baltimore Orioles lineup is as good as any lineup in baseball, and so that gives me a tremendous amount of hope.
And that's without Wieters, who obviously was a tremendous loss.
Yeah, and he might never play for the Baltimore Orioles again.
I know.
They're going to he'll come back in the middle of next year, but if they're not sniffing the playoffs next year and he's back to health, they're going to trade him before the trade deadline next year because he's not going to re-sign, or at least the Baltimore Orioles are not going to pay Matt Wieters what Matt Wieters and his agent Scott Boras are going to ask. So he's going to test the free agent market. So that you're not going to see much more Matt Wieters in the Baltimore Orioles uniform. And he had such, as Orioles fans, we thought he was going to be the Messiah, and he's still really, really good, but he's never, as they said, he never became Maurer with power.
Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
And I was just going to say about the other, I mean, you've got what I think is one of, if not the best coach in baseball, the bullpen's pretty good, but I think the way he handles pitchers, bullpen, rotation, moving players up and down. And I read a story the other day, or maybe even today, about how he and Duquette were making all these moves between sending guys down and then bringing them back up so they don't miss too many times in the rotation, but creating spots. And it's just, Showalter does a lot of magic with the talent he's got. So I think that I would give him some credit for this success as well.
So you watch more, you've relocated, you've been in the Mid-Atlantic for a while now, and you take in more Nationals and Orioles games on TV than you do the Red Sox, but you also go to a lot of Nationals games. Do you think the Nationals are the best team in the National League?
I think they might have the most talent. And I think that out of the two DC teams, I would pick them. And they can make a run. They just seem snake bitten every year with something going wrong. But right now, I would have a tough time picking another team out of the National League for October.
What is Bryce Harper's problem? Like, is he ever going to get it? Is this just a case of somebody being so good at such a young age and so many people around him telling him how good he is and how great he'll be that he just doesn't understand? And again, I kind of rallied against the journalists that cover the game and the integrity of the game, and there's a right way to play the game. But, you know, I've read the stories about Harper and Bias Locker in the post game talking about how he'd organize his lineup and who he'd play and who he wouldn't play. And I mean, is this kid ever going to get it?
You know, I think he's got to at some point. Maybe eventually Matt Williams can break through a little bit. Cause he's fun to watch. He's so much fun to watch. And I think it'd be a shame if somehow he gets driven out of this town, which I don't think will happen, but comments like he's made and some of the things he said. But frankly, in my opinion, we've got a similar issue with Robert, not that we're talking football, but Robert Griffin down here. And I shouldn't say we, because I have no allegiance to either the Nationals or the Redskins, especially not the Redskins.
People might get the wrong idea if you keep
I
it
know,
up.
Right? But no, those comments don't help. But again, I mean, how old is he? What is he, like 23?
He might just be 23. I don't know. He's still
young. No, I know. He's younger than that, I think. Because I think he just recently turned 21. Because there's all these stories about him legally being able to drink, although I'm not sure he does. So anyway, I mean, he's probably 21, 22 years old. I can't imagine what I would have done with all those microphones in my face at that age. And especially as you pointed out, I definitely would have been drinking. But especially as you pointed out, having people tell him his entire life how talented he is. I never had to experience that, so I can't really speak to it. But
no, we actually had people tell us the opposite.
Right, exactly. Well, it was probably the best thing that happened to us.
that's why we're so humble today.
Exactly, working hard and humble.
I'm not going to defend him by saying that he's had to deal with more in his young life than we've ever had to, you know, when it comes to, you know, fame. Mm-hmm. But I certainly think that's part of it.
Like I mentioned, I was at the game. He's fun, so much fun to watch. I was at the game where he actually hurt his thumb. We were sitting right on the third baseline, and he actually didn't even have to slide into the base to do it. But just how hard he runs the bases, how hard he runs in the outfield when he's doing that, he just makes the game fun to watch. So I hope he sticks around.
That quality is admirable. The 100% at all times is admirable. But if he keeps getting hurt, he's
right.
Going to have to learn how to not do
and
it.
They
all
love
the time.
To talk about that down here. Love
I'm
to
sure
talk
they
about.
Do.
Yeah.
Wait, we love to talk about.
No, they.
they like to talk they. About. All right, so we're gonna We're going to get you out of here on this one.
Okay.
If you could look at your son and say, all right, I want you to watch this one player for the next 5-10 years, who would that player be? And I'm going to narrow it down for you. Okay. I'm not going to pick Harper for you. I'm going to do two others.
Okay.
I guess I could do three. I'm going to start with two, though. I'm going to give you Mike Trout and Yasiel Puig, and I'll maybe give you Clayton Kershaw.
See, I'm kind of partial to pitching just because I think the most impressive thing I've ever seen in baseball was Pedro when he was at his height with the Red Sox, watching him just deal. And, well, they have different styles, obviously, and I get some of that similar feeling watching Kershaw. But for the next 5 to 10 years, I would say Trout. He is just amazing. And not that Puig isn't. Puig is unbelievable as well. But I just, there's something about Trout that I would think I would like Joe to watch.
Yeah, I watching Trout last night kind of race around the bases when he hit that mm-hmm. triple that drove yeah. Jeter in. You know who I thought of? I thought of Bo Jackson.
I can see that a little bit.
Do you remember when we were kids and Jackson was on the Royals before he hurt his hip Bo Jackson had a way of making everything look so easy, and he wasn't necessarily a natural baseball player, but he was such a freakishly talented athlete that he just made it look so easy, and he had such effortless power. You watch Trout, and Trout is a huge guy. Huge, he's a big dude.
Yeah.
And the way he moves, if he weren't a perennial all-star in baseball, he probably would have been a tailback in the NFL. He is really an impressive player. And then Yasiel Puig, the reason I mentioned him as one of the three players to direct your son towards for the next 5-10 years is because I think he was kind of misunderstood when he first came into the league last year. I actually see him playing with a lot of joy. I kind of like the way Yasiel Puig plays. I know I know he's done a lot of things to show up his opponents, teammates, whatever. I think a lot of that's misunderstood, but he's incredibly talented, good, but he's also, I kind of like the way he plays and he's learning. I mean, if you look at his on-base percentage this year compared to last, he's only getting better. So that's why I threw Puig in there.
No, I would agree with that. I would say that some of the off-season and preseason or early season stuff was, I think, overblown, overhyped. I think he's amazing for the game, amazing to watch, and he's got a great story. A decision between Puig and Trout is a tough one, but I would go with Trout.
If I were a GM and they were free agents, I'd love to have that choice.
Right, exactly. I'd like to have the money to sign them.
The thing with Kershaw, and you picked Kershaw because of the pitching, your preference for pitching, and he's a lefty, so it's tough to disagree with Kershaw. But I worry slightly with Kershaw. I know he's got durability to this point, but if you watch Kershaw pitch, he's got this little hitch in his delivery that makes me think that one day his arm's just going to come flying off his body.
Well, but that's one of the things that I liken to Pedro. And Pedro being so small and how hard he was able to throw the ball, and then how amazing his changeup looked comparably. I was always afraid his arm was just going to follow the ball to the plate, one of these pitches, the way he got behind those pitches. And so that was actually one of the things where I'm like, something's not exactly natural here between these two guys, but what Kershaw did in the lead up run up to the All-Star game with the 40 plus innings, whatever it was, it's
amazing.
In this day and age, it's amazing. Amazing. And that division.
Yeah. Pedro being a lot shorter than Kershaw.
Yeah.
Okay. I lied. Last one.
Okay.
World Series prediction.
I'm going to go back to the Nationals. I think they've got a shot at doing this, and I think they'll be playing. Unfortunately, I don't think your Orioles have the horses. And while I like what Oakland's done in the regular season, to the reasons we spoke to earlier, I'm going to say it's the Tigers are going to make it through this year. It'll be Nationals Tigers.
Who wins?
Coin flip. I can't see this city winning a championship, so it goes to Detroit.
All right, mark it down. All-Star break. 2014 Chip picks the Detroit Tigers over the Washington Nationals. Thanks for the time, buddy. We're definitely going to check back in a few weeks to talk a little bit more baseball.
Sounds good, man.